This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of the world's best sports management games. Out of the Park Baseball 16, MLB Manager 2015, and Franchise Hockey Manager 2 are all award-winning sports strategy games that reward players every day in amazing ways. An entire universe of sports awaits on your PC or mobile device. And now, even better news, to celebrate the NHL All-Star Game, Franchise Hockey Manager 2 is available at a new low price of just $29.99 for the full game. Plus, Out of the Park Baseball 16 is available at 50% off, just $19.99. So visit OOTPdevelopments.com today for more information. You can purchase Out of the Park Baseball 16 and Franchise Hockey Manager 2 for Windows, Mac, or Linux from Steam or the Out of the Park Developments website, and MLB Manager 2015 from the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store. Out of the Park Baseball 16 and MLB Manager 2015 are fully licensed by Major League Baseball.
Hey there, welcome to the latest episode of the Press Row Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Wiedeye, a.k.a. Pasta Padre, along here with Owen Good of Polygon and TJ Larriman as That Sports Gamer. The last show we did was centered on the potential, or I guess lack thereof, for college sports video games to return. Prior to that, it was a bunch of end-of-year stuff. We reviewed the biggest news of 2015, gave out awards. Now, though, we've reached a point in the new year where there's actual news on games that aren't too far off the horizon, which is really exciting. And we're going to get into all that and more. But first, let's go to you, Owen. How have things been going for you since we last talked? And we'll avoid the whole college basketball discussion.
No, actually, I want to talk about that right now because NC State just lost to Georgia Tech. And I got to tell you, I'm really, really sick and tired of my basketball team losing to these SEC reprobates.
Well, you know, we can bring this up another time, Owen, when it's not so sensitive.
Well, you know, this is like therapy for me, Brian.
I know. I know. And that's what I'm here for.
Yes. Well, it's also a language exercise because it's an exercise in not using foul language that you have to bring up. Bleep out. Excuse me.
Yes. As compared to the pre-show discussion and probably the After Dark segment of our podcast.
Check my Twitter feed. it's not PG-13. No, anyway, I'm doing fine. I'll tell you, though, I don't know if you guys, TJ, you play, you know, Rory McIlroy, PGA Tour. Like, my swing just left me. And it was like round to round, like that. I had one round at Scottsdale where I went 12 under, you know, 59 because it's par 71. I'm like, wow, I'm good. And then the next round, I just got in my head and everything was slow and hooking or slicing and just awful. And so I had to play a couple of practice rounds before the podcast tonight to get myself right again to continue that event in my career.
There was the patch, Owen, right, that added a course, but they didn't change anything gameplay-wise that would have thrown you off, right?
I don't believe that they did, and the course that they added, I played that before I had the troubles that I did, and that would be Stadium Course at PGA West, which was, they just finished up a tour event there for the first time since 1987, 1988, I think. It was infamous as the course too tough for the tour, but they finally returned after 25 some odd years, and now it's in the game. So that's a little bit of an interesting history. I handled it okay, but then again, Rory McIlroy, PGA Tour's short game is really easy to exploit, and that can lead to a lot of low scores.
What's going on with you, TJ? I have a question for you.
Sure, hit me with it.
What are you pointing at on your Twitter profile?
Pointing at you, Brian.
That's what I thought, but I didn't want to seem self-centered.
Yeah, always pointing at you.
Yeah.
Brian, I don't know if I mentioned it last episode, but for Christmas, I did get an Xbox One.
You know, I don't remember you saying that, and so I'm curious then I do, because I suggested a game to you, but we didn't talk about it on the podcast, just on Twitter. What have you picked up for it, and did you sign up for EA Access?
I have picked up Madden, and I have picked up Call of Duty, and I have not signed up for EA Access yet. But I will be signing up for EA Access on, what, March 10th?
Probably, yeah. 10th I believe or that the is, 9th, yeah.
Yeah, I believe that is when the EA Sports UFC 10-hour thing starts. So I figure the way I'm going to use my Xbox One, other than for Call of Duty and some light Madden Ultimate Team, will be essentially just for those 10 hours of EA Access things.
Yeah, so is that going to change where you buy these games? Like, so are you going to... It's one thing to use the 10 hours to just play the game, but it's another if you start, like, Ultimate Team. Are you going to buy the game on Xbox One now instead, or are you just going to play, mess around with it on EA Access and then pick it up on PS4 and start your Ultimate Team there?
Yeah, I'm just going to mess around with it on EA Access and then play Ultimate Team and everything on my PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
I am a PlayStation 4 gamer at heart. I've been there since the original PlayStation, the PlayStation 2, the PlayStation 3, the PlayStation 4.
Is that
you may
like,
have heard of this little thing called the PlayStation Portable, the PlayStation Vita.
Well, God, I mean, seriously, what is it other than brand loyalty, which I respect, but what about the platform keeps you there?
The main thing is baseball. You may know that.
Well, okay, that's a good reason,
has. And the majority of my friends that were on Xbox 360 last generation have now finally seen the light and come over to the PlayStation 4. But I just like to have both consoles to be in touch with everything. But given the choice, PlayStation is always my preferred
console.
Well,
yeah, it's your job. I mean, you know, kind of. But I guess, you know, I'm sorry, Brian, to overshoot this, but I'm bubbled in my thinking because I can write off both consoles as a business expense. I do pay for them. I know everybody thinks I get this stuff for free. I don't.
Yeah, it doesn't really work that way.
but even then, the mindset is sort of distorted from what, you know, the actual purchase decision a gamer makes. But that's a topic for another podcast, and I'll let it go here.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's always a difficult thing to kind of balance having both consoles, especially with third-party titles. I think I tend to lean towards PS4 because most of the people I play with online are PS4, and then Xbox, I just play their exclusive games, and I suggested to TJ, apparently he didn't take my advice to pick up Sunset Overdrive.
Yeah, I have not done that yet. I will be picking that up, I think, though.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite games of last year. But so, of course, like everyone else, what I've been doing lately is creating mock drafts and watching the draft, which was held earlier today for the Pro Bowl. It's my favorite time of the year, guys.
Who's on Team Bryce?
Well, you know, Russell Wilson, I believe, was drafted number one. I think it was to Team Irvin, TJ.
Wait, Brian. These are mock drafts for the Pro Bowl, not mock drafts for the coming year.
Yeah, of course. Everybody's doing those now.
The Pro Bowl is kind of a big deal, Owen. I don't know. If
no, I didn't know. I'm sorry.
I'm not doing a mock draft.
I didn't go so far into Madden to get a mock draft for the Pro Bowl.
No, I'm not really doing mock drafts for the Pro Bowl, Owen.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was kind of. You can tell I've spent too much time away from that.
Yeah, apparently.
But guys, I do plan on live tweeting the Pro Bowl, so make sure you're following me at That Sports Gamer on Twitter.
Oh, what time is the Pro Bowl on? There's the SEO that will return no hits.
That's always the most popular search for the Super Bowl, right?
I know it's on ESPN this year.
I mean, if you really want the hits, you also have to put in the title like streaming and where to watch the Super Bowl.
Yes,
and then you get everything.
I've said at Polygon, I said all of our, because we can adjust the URLs. Oh my God, I've just peeled back Oz's curtain. We can change our URLs when we prepare our posts.
Yeah.
And I've said that like next week, every one of our URLs should be like, what time is the Super Bowl on?
1, 2, 3, just right at the end.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just rake in those good eyeballs.
Yeah, you just got to throw the keywords into the SEO and you're good to go. Yeah. Although I think Google kind of, they're figuring out how to.
No, we're smarter than Google. The hell with Google.
Outsmarting Google. That's impressive. I mean, I haven't been playing as much lately. Just been writing and working on some projects and spending a lot of time keeping my DVR from overflowing and exploding. But as Rich would say, this isn't a TV podcast. So let's get to the good stuff. First, on the docket tonight, I wanted to talk about MLB 16, the show. So this is obviously one of the big games coming out in the next 2 months. It'll be out on March 29th. And Sony San Diego is starting to roll out everything for the game. And they laid out their schedule for Twitch shows and developer blogs. But the focus this week was on detailing what's coming to Road to the Show mode, as well as the new Showtime feature. Now, Road to the Show is a mode that I think a lot of people have believed is kind of in desperate need of being revitalized in some form or fashion in recent years. A lot of people still enjoy it. I think all three of us are among those. But it's still, it's kind of a basic career mode. And you're just playing for stats, and you're playing to build up your guys' attributes, and you're playing for the recognition you get in achieving things in-game as opposed to outside the games. There isn't really that off-the-field type angle that you see in like the NBA 2Ks now. And because of year-to-year save transfers, they really aren't in a position where they can fundamentally change that mode. They can really just tack onto it. So last year they added the bonuses that comes with different equipment. Not really a simulation feature, but I don't think anybody was really bothered by it. This year, though, we've got these new gameplay perks, which can be activated for your player. And some of the examples seen in the trailer they put out were pitchers only throwing you fastballs, or pitchers throwing no fastballs to you, check swing calls always being in your favor, every start for your at-bats being a 1-0 count, and just others that influence potential outcomes when you're at the plate or when you're pitching. Then, of course, there's the Showtime feature, which is the bullet time type thing that slows the action down for you at the plate or when you're in the field. So I think it's fair to say that if features like these were implemented in a Madden or an NBA 2K even, those developers would probably get eviscerated for it. Because with these, you're not just influencing how your player performs, but you're also somehow enacting control over what the CPU is doing against you, and you're artificially giving yourself advantages. I think the difference you see with the show is that they've built up so much trust with consumers that most people don't just assume the whole game is going arcadey because of features that they don't have to use in certain modes. So, but it does bring up the question of whether the show is getting a little gimmicky, and that's specifically in regards to Road to the Show. I'm going to get to some tweets and comments I received on it a little later, but first I want to get your thoughts on it, and I'll go to you, TJ, first, because I know your guy, Cy Darmer. He's a mm-hmm. Twitter sensation, right?
He's big deal. Make sure you're following on Twitter, yeah. At Cy Darmer.
Yeah. So does Cy look forward to any of these features? What is he thinking about what's coming to Road to the Show this year?
He's thinking, is anything going to be there for pitchers? Because mm-hmm. all they showed off right now was stuff for hitters,
yeah.
Which is a little disheartening. But when he bats, he would never, ever stoop to using one of these things. He is a traditionalist, except for that one time that I used that one boost pack thing on him.
It reminds me of going back. We'll get to Owen in a little bit here. But when Owen compared to the boosts that you could purchase for your guys as steroids, right? So,
yeah.
Side armor, he's clean?
For the most part, yeah.
That's good.
But yeah, this stuff really doesn't excite me because, as you said, I don't like that it's going to give me control over the other team. Mm-hmm. Like having the pitcher only throw fastballs. And I don't understand why you would ever want them to only throw junk unless it's like Aroldis Chapman, but even his junk is nasty, so... I don't really get that. I mean, it sounds fun if you're just looking to have fun stuff. But the good thing is, unlike some other sports games, I'm sure there will be a switch to turn all of this off and pretend like it doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
So. Well, yeah. I mean, it's called Don't Equip the Perks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's not to hijack this, but when you were talking about the equipment boosts that were in MLB 15, they've changed the nomenclature here.
Yes.
But when you talk about the equipment boosts, it was like as a pitcher, and I deliberately created a trash man, a guy who threw a knuckleball, a screwball, and a slider.
So basically a Hall of Famer online.
Yes.
If you were ever able to take him online, he'd be unhittable.
Yes, and I destroyed Aram Jabari, who is a Sony Computer Entertainment America spokesperson. We played a game early last year, and I pitched with I'm sorry. I just trashed him with knuckleballs all day long. But anyway, what I'm getting at is this: I equip the perks because, like, if they're available, like, well, why wouldn't you? And then all of a sudden, I'm throwing like a 79 mile an hour knuckleball, which is ridiculous. I'm throwing, you know, I have a two seam fastball that hits 90, which is also kind of ridiculous. And then I had to just go in and disengage the equipment perks that I'd earned. And so I think I share sort of the cockeyed, wait a minute, what's going on here with the perks. And they haven't said whether the equipment boosts are going to be the same thing, if they're going to be carried over or if these replace them.
Well, there was even last year you had things like four-leaf clovers.
you had the cologne that gives you like clutch. What I don't know. I haven't played in a while, so yeah. I can't even remember.
Theoretically, there was some ideas behind those things or why it might help you. But again, like TJ said, it wasn't affecting how other players approach.
Right. Those were just attribute boosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were attribute boosts. And TJ, I respect what you said about not affecting the other team, because that's like, that really is a bridge too far. That's really where you get into, you know, are we playing NFL Blitz? What's going on here? But I think the bailout that MLB The Show will have, argumentatively, if nothing else, is that these can always be unequipped or not used. And the other thing there is, in Road to the Show, from what I saw, you have this bullet time feature. We saw Showtime.
That's Showtime, yeah.
Which is arcadey, yes, in its own right, but you get less of that the more perks you equip. So I don't know, maybe there is some kind of an influence or an incentive to not equip perks if you feel like you need to really bear down in the clutch and hit that breaking ball really hard. You know, I think it's one of these things where baseball is a very different, now I'm going real big picture. Baseball is a very difficult sport to design an enjoyable experience for, because we've all heard it and it's the great truth. And it's what supposedly makes it so wonderful, which is you fail 7 out of 10 times and you're a great hitter. Yeah. And so it's like, how do you realistically recreate that rate of failure and not kill the enjoyment of this game? And it's not something that's particularly apparent to me because I pitch more than I hit, especially in road. I play as pitchers in Road to the Show.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
But they have to do something that makes it enjoyable to a mass audience. And I think if they leave in the option for hardcore folks like us to just go, okay, we're not going to do this stuff, then that's fine.
It's pretty hard to avoid using them, though, don't you think? I mean, even if...
it's a temptation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if you are purely like a sim-type player, and I know I would see those things and I'd be like, why wouldn't I use it at this point? I can get a much better chance of hitting a home run or something, or I'm going to be able to strike this guy out because it's giving me two strikes already or something, you know, those. And then there's also the issue of, you know, not that any of us care about it, but leaderboards and things of that nature that you have to, that some people will be using it, some won't. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, it's a single player mode. So for me, and I know a lot of people too, I always look at those things like, I don't care what anybody else does. They can turn off all the cheats or turn on all the cheats. They can, play on the lowest difficulty, whatever is fun for them. That's all that really matters. It's an offline mode. It's not affecting me how they play. So I know that's one way to look at it. And I think with the show, what happens is they always give you a lot of options and ways to customize your own personal experience. So, but I do think, you know, I wonder if this is all they can do, and I'd like your guys' opinions on this. Is this all they can do with Road to the Show now, is tack on gimmicky type of features to what's already there, as opposed to doing something bigger with it? And is that related to the year-to-year saves, or is it just they don't have the resources to do its own kind of story mode or anything of that? I mean, 2K is really the only one who's gone to those lengths. But you see elements of story or elements of off-the-field stuff in career modes, and those just haven't made it into the show.
Well, I would say that if a studio like San Diego Studio, which it's got to be the smallest one handling a major license of the sports developers, I don't know what its actual manpower is, but I can't imagine it rivals, you know, Visual Concepts or Tiburon or EA Canada. I don't think they have the time or the manpower or the budget to do anything close to what 2K does with its role-playing, you know, support for my career. And I think if they were to even try, it would just be a series of text messages that pop up, you know, between games. You know, congratulations, or, you know, your agent says you should do this, or some other nonsense like that. Mm-hmm. You know, they have a hard enough time. I mean, I'm going to be interested to see what happens with the presentation in this game, which has really gone stale. You know, the last upgrade that they had was basically to introduce two new announcers in the place of one. And you know, no offense to Eric Karras or Steve Lyons, they just they don't do a good job of portraying themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, in this game. So this is a game that has very limited resources for coloring outside the lines. You know, within the lines, it's a hell of a damn game. And I think that that's what keeps people engaged. I think Sony knows that. You know, these makers very rarely act without intelligence, maybe incomplete, maybe uninformed, but they act with information, and probably what they're being told right now is people like the gameplay a hell of a lot. They like the realism of that gameplay a hell of a lot. And yes, there's a lot of other things on this that they would, you know, like to see added in, but that's just not something that's going to come true given the current level of development that goes on, you know, for this game. And I agree that Road to the Show, it's like it keeps getting Band-Aids, and this seems like another Band-Aid. Mm-hmm. And that's tough to stomach, because you also realize, you know, around August, if you're not, unless you're like a super dedicated player, you know, you're going to top out on this thing. As soon as that next sports title comes in that you really enjoy playing, you know, hits the shelves, the show's gone. And that's a hard thing to grapple with, because there's not a lot of sticking power once it runs up against, you know, other sports games competitors for your mind space, not talking about the marketplace. But I think you need to have reasonable expectations of who is making this game, how they're making this game, and what they have to make this game with. And you know, Tiburon Canada at EA, they're not doing anything like NBA 2K. Mm-hmm. So why would we expect Road to the Show to do anything like that?
Yeah. I think it stands out because it's one of their premier modes, or it has been for such a long period of time. Now, like you said, Owen, though, they're always trying to find ways to make the game more accessible. They're always trying to find ways to make the game more fun to a wider audience, because really it is. Baseball sells right now to a market that is pretty much just the purists. And so they're trying to reach a more casual audience, and I'm just not sure. TJ, you can tell me what you think on this. Does adding in features like these, I mean, in theory, it sounds like they're going to make the mode more enjoyable for people who maybe aren't worried about how sim it is, but is someone actually going to be more likely to buy the game because they see boosts that you can equip on a player? You know, to me, I'm just not sure that tacking on features like that ends up changing anything for anyone of note, really.
Yeah, I definitely don't think so. And to your point earlier, I think having the year-to-year saves does kind of hamstring them in this kind of stuff. Though it kind of shows the problem with the mode is that you're not going to play, you know, 20 years of a player's career in one cycle of the game. So I think the only way to get it to a point where you can market it as this big new thing is if they revamped it from scratch. And with the year-to-year saves, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. Did you, in MLB 15, did you carry your guy over from MLB 14?
I did not. So this is going to be the first year I carry one over.
Oh, and can I interject with a piece of news here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I checked. We wouldn't have been able to discover this last year. The saves are not backward compatible. And I know that I know that some people might go, huh? But because there's no PS Vita edition of MLB The Show this year, I asked, could I start or continue my career into MLB 16 and then upload that save to the cloud, access it with my Vita and MLB 15, and continue in a limited fashion there? And I was told straight out, no, it's forward compatible only. So that might be a little esoteric, but that is kind of key. MLB The Show on the Vita is functionally obsolete if you are playing the latest version of the game on either PS3 or a PS4. But yeah, I did port forward my player from 14 to 15 to answer your question, Brian.
Now, would you be able to take that guy again? Is it only for 1 year, or could you continue rolling him over for several years? Do you know that?
I can continue rolling him over because his save is now current with the current edition of the game. I guess the question now is, and I don't know, I should ask San Diego this, can you port someone forward from MLB 14, The Show, to 16?
Directly?
I don't see why not, but that obviously we have no test case for that yet.
Yeah. For me, I did it just to test it, but I didn't carry the guy over. And like I have this, I'm not sure I want to continue each year because I want to start them anew with the new features. So to me, it's not all that appealing, actually. I think I'd be more likely to do it in franchise unless they change franchise up pretty big. But
yeah, but you get 5 or 6 years into a career, especially if you're like a pitcher, and now you're really throwing away a lot of progress. Yeah. And
I don't
who the hell wants to play at those same three minor league stadiums all, you know, again?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I tend so not make to sure, get that far, so.
Yeah, so make sure you follow me on Twitter to make sure you are up to date when I break out my new closer for MLB 16, The Show, or MLB, what is it? MLB The Show 16?
Yes, that is it now.
Yes, that's correct.
So I'll be starting a closer for MLB The Show 16, and he will be my other guy that also goes every year.
Is he going to be?
One day I'll make a
hitter. That's very important, TJ, because now with Road to the Show, you can play all the games in a series without going back to the start menu, which is important for position players and closers. Yeah.
It's funny. That's pretty huge for closers.
It's funny.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's funny that, you know, this last year for MLB 15, one of my favorite improvements to the game was just faster loading times, doing part two, Road to the Show, and going in and out so often because I, too, play as a reliever. So being able to go through several games without having to go back to the menus is a godsend. And so it's going to be funny. It's not a back-of-the-box feature, but that's probably going to be one of my favorite aspects of the game this year.
Yeah, and I kind of wish it wasn't just arbitrarily each series. I wish you could just go.
Yeah, I agree. So I wanted to get to some tweets because I asked and also got some comments in a few other places about these additions to Road to the Show and the Showtime feature, just to get kind of the temperature of the consumers out there and what they were thinking as far as it goes to these things. And So I'll go through some of them, but I'll give you the one that I would put in a category other than the others. So the one from James on Twitter, he doesn't personally see the problem with these features as long as it isn't forced on them. Let the players play how they want. So that's basically what I had said earlier as far as my general philosophy on this. But pretty much every other response was negative. And I don't mean negative in the sense that they're not going to buy the game anymore. This is not going to affect whether people choose to buy it, or, you know, it can affect whether they choose to buy it. It's not going to make anybody not want to buy the game, but there might still be some concern out there about it. So I'm going to rattle off some of those now. Donovan on Twitter, absolutely. It's gimmicky. These things could be fun, but they aren't features that sell him. He'll turn it off if anything. Manny says Road to the Show is getting gimmicky, but hopefully as long as that doesn't translate to franchise, it'll be okay. Bubba says the series feels it's in a standstill and is catering to the casual fan, and he gets that it's getting gimmicky, gets the feeling. And Joe on Twitter says that it seems like they're venturing down the road to arcadey what's next on-screen XP pop-ups. And that, of course, is in reference to Madden, yeah, which was not a feature people were really felt great about this year. And then a couple
of on-screen XP pop-ups now
in Madden,
in MLB,
yeah, in Madden
to keep your level thing up. That well, that level thing that goes player. To 30 after like 2 weeks, and then it never changes again.
Well, we're not talking about your individual players or players on the field, right?
Coach.
Yeah. So we're talking about in Madden when you make a play and then you see the plus 10 or whatever pop up next to your players on the field in franchise. A few other comments here. Spade says the game needs an overhaul. It's great, but there are things getting stale. You know, commentary obviously being one he cites, and then it's a little gimmicky. Darren says he's not a fan of these features. Apparently they're optional, but he's sick of companies trying to introduce gimmicks into a sim game to try and draw in a larger crowd. And D-Dog says they're starting to cross the line from simulation to arcade more every year, and they're wasting time on useless features. Now, the ironic thing is I think we've heard some of these things every year with the show for the past several years, and then people have generally liked the features, whether it's quick counts, which I personally didn't like, but a lot of people appreciate. Player lock was another one. And the show has been introducing features that appeal to kind of a wide audience. And at first you look at them and you say, you know, that's not what I wanted. But maybe you end up still appreciating it all in the end. You guys have any reaction to those thoughts that came in from people?
Well, I think I respect what the crowd is saying, and I also, at the same time, go, you know, these guys' jobs, you know, it's to grow the audience somehow, and they're doing the best they can with that. Mm-hmm. And you know, at some point, we sort of reach a critical mass of realism that's presented within a video game. That's like, well, you know, it's almost like the 100-meter dash. And how many hundredths of a second are you going to be shaving off of it to make the world record? Mm. And so, you know, what incremental things are we adding on a game of overall high quality, which I don't think anybody denies? You know, what kind of things actually like make a breakthrough? And we saw that 2 years ago with, I feel, player lock. Mm-hmm. Like you, Brian, I wasn't a big fan of quick counts, but I sort of see their utility. You know, in some of these games, especially if you're going to be playing as a hitter, it gets back to, again, what is San Diego Studio equipped to deliver? Because it is not the kind of pageantry and big wrapper that Electronic Arts puts around its games. And you just sort of need to go, okay, the visual pleasure of this game is going to be within what is taking place on the field and not the virtual broadcast that comes around. I mean, we're going to hear the same damn theme music for this game. You know, again, I mean, you talked about, Brian, I always start over because I want to, you know, try the new features. I'm like, I don't start over because I don't want to hear the same damn theme music at the same damn seven minor league ballparks when I'm in, you know, the Texas League. So it's one thing to go. I mean, I think it's a fair criticism to say, why the hell do you do this when you don't do other things? But I also think it's like, you can't really equate putting in these kinds of star cards. Can you tell I've been playing Star Wars Battlefront too much?
Yeah.
You can't really equate that with overhauling the broadcast. Because that is a huge, huge effort, you know, beyond, I mean, hell, you know, Madden's guys hired somebody from NFL Films to do theirs. And it does look better, even if, you know, Phil Sims and Gene Nance aren't, you know, much to listen to. It is better. But I don't even think that San Diego can get to that. So it's just tough. But I get what you say, and I think it's fair criticism, and I think that they're fair in that they go, hey, I'm not saying I'm never going to buy this or never going to play this because of this stuff, but it's what I would like to see. And so I think both sides understand each other.
Yeah, it's you know, it's a balance there within the product, and what they have to do is, you know, the vast majority of the show speaks to the simulation gamer, speaks to the baseball purists. It just so happens that the first thing they really focused on talking about is Road to the Show, which is getting inherently a little more arcade-like, which, again, I personally don't have a problem with because I don't care how other people play a single-player mode, and I might mess around with it just for fun, but it maybe breaks a little bit of that realism within it. But, I mean, oh well, it's a video game. Some of that is going to happen regardless. So let's...
Yeah, I'm not going to be, you know, a blowtorch throwing left-hander with a 99-mile-an-hour fastball in real life.
Well, come on, Owen. Get out there and do it instead of playing a video game.
I mean, I'm 42 years old, Ryan. But anyway.
Isn't that the criticism you always get in the comments? Just play. Yes. Just play. Go outside, Owen.
If you think you can do better, go do it.
Yeah, that's the other one. It's the other one. Just go develop your own game then, Owen. And TJ, you too.
Sure, I'll try.
Thank you.
Wait, let me chime in, please.
Yes, go. Anytime.
Even though we don't really like these things that they're doing so far for this Road to the Show stuff, at least they're doing something. They could literally be doing nothing.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, yeah.
And maybe one of these things turns in, has an idea that is good, that next year turns into something that we all end up loving.
Although I will point out this, that that Showtime, that is a total ripoff of the reaction time that NCAA football introduced in NCAA 13 now 4 years ago. You guys remember that?
Oh, yes. It was the single-player mode, right?
So correct. And yeah, it was
Barry Sanders and – yeah.
Yep. And it was the only thing that made – I loved that for one reason and one reason only. It made a user-controlled player's awareness rating actually have meaning. Mm-hmm. Because it was tied to that. Outside of that, you know, what's the point of that rating? But anyway, I digress.
Yeah. But again, there you go. And EA was probably heavily criticized for that. But there's so much other stuff in the NCAA product, and there's so much other stuff in the show. If you just look at their schedule of upcoming blogs and streams, I mean, there's so much that they're going to get into that, you know, in the matter of a week, nobody's going to really worry about any of this stuff. But for the people that play Road to the Show, it'll end up mattering. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, moving on to a different game that had some questions about simulation versus arcade with its first title in the series. We've got UFC also coming up, March 15th release date. And as TJ mentioned earlier, 5 days prior to that on Xbox One through EA Access. So we're just kind of hitting now the teeth of that promotional cycle. So within the last week or two, we've had news on Mike Tyson being one of the three pre-order incentive fighters. We've got the closed beta, which is just starting up now. We have the roster and ratings for the welterweight division from a live stream initially that Quentin Rampage Jackson had that ran for 3 hours despite there supposedly being an NDA on the beta and they let the stream go. We have a bunch more details on how Ultimate Team is going to work. And out of all of that, I mean, there's a lot to digest here with UFC, and there's, you know, still a bunch more to come. But, Owen, what stands out to you the most out of everything going on with UFC right now?
That they're coming back so soon.
It does seem early, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, except for the fact that, you know, like when THQ handled this license, it was a big deal when they skipped a year.
Yeah.
I'm kind of talking to my hat here. I don't play a lot of, you know, the mixed martial arts games. I haven't, you know, going back 5 years, I was more of a boxing guy. I think that it's when I look at UFC, you know, the thing that I look at and I go, okay, you know, this is good news is because they didn't just throw it on the vault and go, the hell with it, we're going to think of something else to do. You know, they're going to make this license work. Now, however long, you know, whether it's because they got a license through 2022 and they got to turn out something, I don't know. But, it, you know, they're putting out, you know, a new game and an update. It's just like, are the improvements going to be dramatically different either to one, the hardcore audience, or two, you know, people are going, hey, what's this all about? You know, the Mike Tyson thing, I don't really care about. It's you know, a nice little promotional detail. That's obviously the kind of crap that they're talking about right now. It's something that's also unlockable if you want to complete the career mode and, you know, finish it as a champion. You can get him for free. You don't have to pre-order. It's a game that's sort of resting out there. It's like, I think the first UFC that EA Sports did came in with high expectations and fell short of them. And people were like, whoa. And it kind of snapped our heads. It's like, well, I thought they would do a better job of this, because obviously the combat sports that EA Canada delivered, you know, in Fight Night were, you know, highly acclaimed. I mean, going back 2-3 editions. This one, it's not so much a redemptive effort, but it's like, okay, you know, can they put together something that we really want to see out of a martial arts video game, martial arts simulation? You know, was the last one hurried? I don't know. You know, are we going to be talking about more material things than whether or not a fighter's toes spread when he steps down on the canvas?
I sure hope not.
Yeah, but you know, at this stage, you know, the beta that's coming up, and that's multiplayer only, right?
I think there is some offline you can play. It's just one weight class. Let me look while you keep talking.
Yeah, its main purpose is multiplayer. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been a closed beta to begin with. And the Rampage Jackson thing is kind of funny, in how he derailed their plans there. But multiplayer is for them to gather information about how their game performs, you know, among people playing in different places. It doesn't really get to, like, you know, the repeatable instances of when I do this, does Y happen, you know, in your living room, and I'll have to reserve my judgment there. I don't think it's going to be a bad game. I don't think it's going to be an indifferent game, but I also don't really have any information that, you know, suggests that. I mean, I don't know what the features are in this game that are going to make it more compelling than the previous one.
Well, we can get to one of those right now. It's Ultimate Team.
I mean, I've never understood how the hell this applies to an individual sport, so yes. Please enlighten me.
Yes, okay. So, TJ, would you like to explain it? So the Ultimate Team is new to UFC this year, and of course it's been, you know, a more natural version of Ultimate Team, you would imagine, within the team sports games. And so we're getting an Ultimate Team in UFC, and I think it's also the direction they want to take for esports. And so you ask, you know, you bring up Owen, it's coming back and everything. I think that's one reason why it's back, and it's back after just a year and a half, because they want to get into the esports scene with a fighter, which is even a more natural esports type game, a one-on-one type game, as opposed to trying to do that with Madden or FIFA or NHL. So Ultimate Team, we'll hit you here with this, TJ. But basically, you're building a team of five fighters, all created fighters, if I understand correctly. And then instead of, like, in Madden, where you open a pack of cards and you get players, you're getting stuff for your fighters to make them better, right, TJ?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. So, and it looks like some of the stuff will be, it will improve some one area of your fighter, but also it could hurt another area. Mm-hmm. Like, stuff will improve your movement and kick speed, but it'll decrease your ground and pound.
Yeah. So basically, Owen, you've got a team of fighters, but you're only using one fighter at a given time. In a fight, obviously, and you're trying to beef up your team and each individual fighter through what you purchase, and that affects their attributes. It affects what moves they can do, special boosts and skills that they can obtain. And
this sounds really contrived and enforced on the development team from above. But I'll have some commentary about Ultimate Team modes later on in this podcast.
Yeah, and so. You know, as far as sales go, I mean, UFC has been disappointing. It was definitely disappointing for EA. It didn't reach what they had hoped of it. And if you look at, this is something I've written about several times, if you look at the trajectory of UFC sales, it's just going down and down and down. From UFC 2009, which THQ released, which in its first month it sold 1 million copies. And then EA to where we were in 2014 with EA UFC, and that one not even reaching 300,000 in its first month. So they have to find a way to make this license profitable for them, and Ultimate Team is one route to that. Now, I'm curious, TJ, it sounds like Owen isn't really interested in the concept of this Ultimate Team. Do you think this is going to appeal to the normal Ultimate Team players? Do you think it's going to appeal to people who maybe don't typically play Ultimate Team, or do you think it's not really going to work for anyone?
I'm worried that it's not really going to work for anyone, specifically because it kind of reminds me about how MLB The Show went along with Diamond Dynasty originally, where you could create Dynasty players. Mm-hmm. So if they don't put like limits on how many attribute cards and stuff that you can apply to each guy, there's going to be people out there with just super destruction machines that are just going to walk into the ring and kill you every time you go in.
Yeah. And that,
and that was, that ruined Diamond Dynasty personally for me in MLB 13 and 14. So hopefully that's something that they've planned on so that doesn't happen in UFC. It seems kind of cool, but I think the attraction of Ultimate Team in the other games is you can put together a team of the best players in the sport, not a bunch of created guys running around.
Yeah, you know, what I kind of like about that, though, is that it gives you the opportunity to craft the fighters. As long as you said, like you said, TJ, as long as there's something in place to prevent you from just going overboard on stats and just being unstoppable. What you get to do is craft them to your personal skill set as far as playing the game. So if you like to stay on the feet and you want your all your fighters to primarily you know, have good punching and good kicking, but you know, maybe you have to sacrifice how they are on the ground or in the clinch, then you can do that. As opposed to, well, I got this fighter in particular, and he's only good at this, even though maybe that's not the way I like to play.
But what's good about that is you would learn who those fighters are. And I think that's been the greatest thing for specifically FIFA with all the tons of leagues that are in there, and Madden to a lesser extent. You learn who all these other people are that you don't see day to day.
Yeah, I think that was one of my favorite things about NCAA's Ultimate Team, the 1 year it actually had it, was that you were going back and learning about players from the past that maybe you didn't even know because there's so many. So I think that's one of the issues with UFC is that you kind of have a roster that is, you know, they talk, it's the biggest roster ever in a UFC game or whatever, but still, you know, the majority of the fighters anybody cares about, there's like 20. and besides that, you've got guys who aren't really going to be nearly as good. And maybe that's a positive thing for Ultimate Team, is to get people fighting with those, to learn about the fighters. It'd be good for UFC in the long run to have people knowledgeable about their entire roster of people instead of just the champions and you know, the top five contenders in each weight class. But also within this mode, so they're trying to give you a lot of customization, and they're going heavy on things like the look of fighters. And I think there's a game face type feature and extensive tattooing. But you're going into this release, I wondered how were they going to compensate, because one of the things people like to do in, and this is just not Ultimate Team, but also in your career mode, was, you know, customizing your trunks, getting your sponsors for your flag and all this stuff that you could do in the past that now because of Reebok you can't do. So now on to the beta, which we discussed a little bit before. Now, the beta, what it offers up is, that's a closed beta, apparently, and I think there's supposed to be an NDA involved with it, but I don't know completely yet. But you have the ability to use quick fights, so that's an offline thing, but you can also fight online. You can start up an Ultimate Team, which does not carry over to the actual game. So you're just basically playing around with it and trying it. There's practice mode and there's skills challenges. And again, nothing you do within there is going to carry over to the full game. Now, I wonder, you know, they struggled. EA struggled with the first EA UFC, and they struggled because its identity was really, you know, they didn't really have a good identity for the product. It was, you know, is UFC ever going to reach a casual audience? I'm not sure. It's too complicated of a game. But they tried to market the game, and they tried to design the gameplay to be friendlier to the casual audience. And so this closed beta, which they made really restricted as far as getting codes to people who only had owned or only had played or owned the first UFC, and then you had to go through this process of signing up for their stupid newsletter, and then if you were lucky, you got an email saying you're going to get a code, and it didn't work for a lot of people who were supposed to be eligible. So what is, other than obviously them collecting feedback for the release, that things that they might be able to patch even before the release, or stuff they can adjust as far as their servers go, is this the right way to go about promoting the product, or is this just about feedback? Because to me, it seems like you do a beta to create word of mouth early.
Well, I would say the requirement that, you know, you have played the original UFC kind of speaks to they want the feedback. Mm-hmm. But it also, in, you know, if you're going to be cynical about it, speaks to message management, which is, well, we don't want people jumping into this and going, oh, this is stupid, because the last thing they played, you know, was Fight Night Round 4 in 2009.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it can break either way on that. I think the fact that this was supposed to be a closed beta speaks pretty clearly to it's supposed to be a primarily feedback event. Now, publicity around it is another thing altogether,
which they've tried to capitalize on already with the Rampage stream. I don't know if you saw that, but they put out an infographic saying, look to the extent of which people went to play the UFC beta and Rampage streaming it. So they jumped on that.
The information I had, because here I'll just go ahead and be really blunt about this. Mm-hmm. We got an offer to participate in the beta, you know, at Polygon, and they sent us the TNC for that. Mm-hmm. And I look at it and I read it over and I go, I went back to the person who sent it to me and I said, I want to be sure what's going on here, because, you know, if this is a closed beta, you know, that's an NDA. You know, that's like, I can't talk about what I'm doing while I'm doing it.
Right.
So what's the point here? I mean, and I put it a little more politely than that, but it's like, you know, if you're sending this to me, is there some publicity involved? Because if you're sending me free code, I need to honor the purpose for which it was sent. And if you're sending me free code that I can't talk about, then why the hell am I talking or, you know, playing it? And the response on that was that Rampage went off message, that it threw some of their plans into disarray, that they decided, okay, we're just going to have to move along with it, and that they can't alter the language of the TNC that they sent out because lawyers. But, you know, if you are a part of this beta and you put something up on the web and you say, hey, here's what I see or have done in this game, they're not going to send IP enforcement after you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I know. And so, you know, that background knowledge, you know, combined with this sort of haphazard what happened with Rampage Jackson, leads me to believe that this is supposed to be a feedback event, or at least it was conceived as such. And now that it isn't, they've decided, you know, okay, we'll try to promote it as much as we can. And yeah, everybody goes, oh, well, EA, you know, wanted to guerrilla leak this or some other baloney like that. Let's have a little Occam's razor here, folks. That takes a lot of effort, you know, if not paying someone like Rampage Jackson to do something like this. So I think this is supposed to be a feedback event more than promotional. And now that the cat's out of the bag, they're going to promote it.
Well, it makes sense, because what's going to be coming out of this more than anything else, it's going to be people posting short clips of knockouts, right? Mm-hmm. Or submissions, which is perfect. I mean, mm-hmm. That's, why would you not want people throwing that stuff up on social media and stuff and say, you know, like from the Rampage thing, there was a knockout of CM Punk, which I quickly gift and put up because it was cool looking and it was CM Punk, and so people were like, yeah, that, you know, that's how his first match is going to go, you know. So I think it's a good way to actually promote the game. Now, maybe you don't want 3 hour long videos of it, but I think they're at the point now where you know, the game's probably in a state, well, it has to be in a state, even for this beta, that you know, it's nearing release. It's in a state that they're probably pretty confident in, and they're only going to get positive stuff out of it by letting people talk about it. So you know, one more subject, main subject for tonight. You know, over the years, I think we've all, I don't know, TJ, you've never been to E3, right?
Correct, I have not. But if you want to send me this year, I'd be more than happy to go.
I don't think you'd want to go.
Just send me like the week before, because I hear good stuff's going on.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? So instead of their typical booth at E3 and the typical press briefing on the Monday, the day prior to the show floor opening up, you know, there's the EA now has announced that they're leaving E3 and they're going to hold their own event the Sunday before, as far as the press briefing, and then from that day, from the 12th of June to the 14th of June in Los Angeles. So they're exiting E3 essentially for their own event. And this is similar to what Sony's doing with their PlayStation Experience, which takes place every December now. And I think Bethesda does this a little bit also before E3 rather than showing up at E3. Now, E3 is an interesting subject for me because I've gone several times, and every time I went, it felt less important to be there. The value, especially when covering sports games, would reduce each year, it seemed like, and they got, you know, EA in particular got more protective about stuff. You could no longer film the games. You could no longer take pictures. And they started, you know, blocking off part the majority of their game, just leaving basically a demo on the floor. So now, instead of being one part of this giant event, they're going to have their own thing, which is actually going to be open to fans to an extent. You'll have to get tickets because there's obviously capacity concerns, but they're going to go after the fans who actually can maybe drive word of mouth more than press does these days. And I'm wondering, what does this mean for E3? What does it mean for EA? What was your first reaction to this, Owen?
Sorry, it came in a little quick. Came in a little slow off my own mute there. My first reaction to this is, you know, it's a natural evolution of what we've seen from the major publishers and the major, you know, hardware makers, which is they have all of these channels that are available to them that they control fully, that are on their own timetable, that get out their message verbatim, you know, to their customers, and they don't have to go through a gatekeeper or a filter such that we represent. So, this is a natural evolution of that. And, you know, if I have an existential reaction to that, it's just I have to provide something that's more interesting or greater context to what they're doing, you know, as opposed to what we would usually do at E3, which is to go down there and say, hey, here's all the cool stuff we saw that you couldn't see, because that's not happening now. EA is – their event is going to run 3 days, and it's going to kick off with their news conference on Sunday. And the second day is going to be a public-only event. And I know that sounds kind of weird to say it's public-only and that the press and the industry isn't invited, but that really is what it means, or at least is what it was told to me, which is those who register and go to this thing in Los Angeles, and there's a companion event in London, will get to play all of whatever they're showing in L.A. first. And then, you know, Brian, you and I, or people like you and I, will get our crack at it on Tuesday. Mm. And you know, I think that's also kind of a, you know, I think that's a publicity decision as well, which is, you know, if you get enthusiasts out there, their first reaction is probably going to be enthusiastic, unless the game is really terrible. You know, might as well lead with that hype as opposed to, you know, people, you know, doing some kind of a formal sit down, with, you know, a developer going, well, now what have you done with this year's game? I don't think EA is going to pull out of the pre E3 Judges Week, which is when a lot of these previews are written, and also for sports titles like coming into E3, the sports titles that they preview are usually NHL, Madden, and FIFA. I don't think that's going to exclude those from that. I think that'll still be a heavy part of the news cycle, but it does point to publishers and major newsmakers in this going, we can just take this directly to the folks, and the press, they can do what they want, and if they want to just sit there and type on their keyboards during our keynote and regurgitate verbatim what we say up there, that's great. If that means
they love that.
Yeah, well, they love that, and frankly, we love that because it means traffic to us. It's something that I've had a real problem with for a while, but I also recognize where we are. This is not like what covering video games was. You can go to E3. You can go to E3 without setting foot in Los Angeles. Just watch a lot of live streams. Seriously, because that's about the same thing that we see. The only thing that you don't get is you don't get to play these games in person on hand yourself. But Brian, and I'll throw it back to you here, that playing a sports video game on the show floor, first of all, you're going to get a limited experience. And secondly, it's so difficult to evaluate what you're looking at in a compressed time with all those distractions. It is meaningless as any kind of an authoritative preview.
Oh, it really is. I mean, I just got nothing out of it anymore because it's a miserable experience. Everyone who hasn't been to E3 thinks it must be so much fun, right? But no, you're dealing with crowds.
You're working your ass off. You're walking your ass off too.
Yes, you're dealing. It's 115 degrees in there. I mean, I deal with vertigo issues. I think there have been a couple times where I went to E3 where I pretty much almost like collapsed just out of like the heat and just the activity of the whole day. And then it's not like you get to sit and play the games. You're standing playing the games. And when we do it, we're taking mental notes. We're taking actual notes. We're, interviewing people, talking to them as we play. That's another thing. There's so many distractions. You can't hear the commentary. People always ask, what's the audio like? You can't tell them. It's too loud in there. I found, over the years, there were E3s where we could pretty much play for hours on end, but it's gotten so crowded, and now you're pretty much pressured to get off the consoles there. TJ, do you think it's more interesting to have a fan-centric event than an industry event? Do you think that really speaks to people more, that you're going to get more genuine reaction and impressions out of that?
I mean, I like it better than having to force a whole bunch of people to stand on a line for a long time to play 5 minutes of a game.
Well, that probably, that might still be happening. I don't know.
Yeah, well.
But
I think the real thing is they just want to have like a life-size AT-AT there for Battlefront, and the convention center probably wouldn't let them have it. The one thing that I do like is that they're moving their press conference to that Sunday. I guess that kicks off that whole thing. Which is nice because I always felt like that their press conference would get lost in the shuffle because I think it was like the same day as like them, Konami, and like two other people.
Yeah, it would land in between Microsoft and Sony, and there was also Ubisoft in there, and I don't know, some others usually. But it was. You kind of wake up with one, then you'd get to EA, and then you'd move on to others.
Yeah, so I mean, I like the idea. I don't know if it's going to work, so I guess we'll find out that. I would more actually, I mean, they're not going to do it. I would love to see like a traveling roadshow of their games, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's interesting because, there's only a few publishers that could really justify having their own event. EA is one of them because they're going to have several sports games, but they're also going to have some shooters and Star Wars and Mass Effects, whatever else they have in the pipeline. That can appeal to kind of different people. The interesting thing about E3 is that other than EA, as far as sports games though go, no one else really showed up. The 2K doesn't show NBA 2K there, for example, and so. E3's importance to sports has really dwindled over the years, and I think that's part of what you're seeing here. But I think you're also seeing the importance of E3 as far as publishers go is really diminished also. I mean, do you think this is a blow to E3, Owen?
I've heard that E3 filled EA's booth space.
Well, they had the prime spot.
Well, now, hold on. There's a difference between filling the square footage and sprinkling it around elsewhere in South Hall as opposed to finding someone who occupies the very exact same space.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I don't think Bethesda Softworks is stepping into that. I mean, and you look at Konami, and here's my gratuitous weekly Konami doesn't give a damn about video games comments. But you know, it's like, seriously, you know, the number of major publishers is not going up. You know, I'm not looking at you, 505 and Deep Silver. You guys are still bargain bin publishers. So the ESA says they quickly replaced that space means little to me. It means maybe they redistributed the space somewhere else. Now it's you know, what do they do? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they put 2K at the front of South Hall. They still have, I guess they still have a large presence out there. Maybe they put Square Enix. Maybe they put Warner Brothers. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, they usually put the console makers all together in the other hall. God, it's been 2 years since I've been. I can't even name it.
South Hall, right?
No, South is where EA was.
Yeah, South is where EA is. West Hall is
West. Excuse me.
Is like Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo. Yeah.
Right, yeah, because it was near the press room and all the food trucks out on that concrete parking slab.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, to get back to this, I don't know that it signals like some kind of a death blow for E3, because if I'm not mistaken, like a decade ago, E3 decided we're going to back away from the glitz and glamour. We're going to be real serious about, you know, being an industry, you know, show only. And
was that
like,
when they spread it out over like Santa Monica and stuff?
Or yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then people were like, the hell with this.
Yeah.
You know, why the hell are we coming down to LA? You know, we want to be downtown, especially if you're downtown when playoff basketball or hockey is going on. And, you know, this is not, you know, this is Christmas for us. You took it away. And so the ESA said, okay, fine, we'll bring that back. I think that, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Activision at one point bailed out of E3 for a year and, you know, just didn't have a booth at all. But then again, Activision is not a publisher like EA, and then Activision has like, you know, it has Call of Duty, it has the Blizzard franchises, and then it has, you know, whatever licensed favors it's doing for Marvel Comics. It's I want to say something definitive because everybody's listening to this and is like, yeah, is E3 in trouble? Is EA not in trouble? E3 not in trouble? I can't say for sure. I think, you know, a lot of what people don't see with E3 is there are a lot of tiny-ass booths that are built on peripherals that in past years have been built on VR. That will be a bigger piece this year, you know, that were built on mobile gaming and things like that too. And that is probably what is picking up the slack when EA decides, hey, we're out of here. And it's what picked up the slack when Nintendo said, hey, we're out of here last year. And I think that that the square footage of their exhibitor space either maintained or slightly improved. So, no, as an event, E3 is still with us. And it's better than the alternative, which is to go to, you know, the Consumer Electronics Show and hang out with the porn stars in Las Vegas.
Yes, take it right across the street, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. You know, one more thing I wanted to do. I think, you know, this might be just a regular segment on the show going forward. We're going to close out the show by breezing through what each of us found to be the most interesting story or stories of the last week, or in this case, since the last episode, that we haven't already discussed in this show. So, Owen, go ahead and shoot. I know you had at least one on your mind.
Well, it was interesting that, you know, this is sort of like, you know, the grains of salt. I don't know how many they add up to. There were some figures that were reported by a third-party research firm. So this is not – these were not numbers that were reported by the sellers or the marketplaces themselves. But there were some interesting digital sales numbers that came through. This is via CNBC, although the original source is – and I'm scrolling up here to look at it – It's like a super dad or some damn thing like that. But anyway, they were looking at the amount of digital revenue, you know, done by video games in 2015. And this has been a point of contention because I'm sure, Brian, as you've noticed, you know, a lot of people assail the NPD numbers because they only cover packaged goods.
Right.
It doesn't really count for either the digital sale of full versions or the, you know, add-ons, you know, the extra stuff that you can buy. And that's very relevant to sports because of Ultimate Team and the other things that you can buy on top of that. Anyway, looking through this, in the top 10, Madden and FIFA occupied 4 of the top 10 spaces. And that's because 2 editions released, or excuse me, were active within the calendar year of 2015.
Yeah, the previous year's game and this year's game, yeah.
And FIFA did close to $550 million in digital revenue.
Yeah.
Now, first of all, that's a global figure. And secondly, I don't know how much of that is people who bought the $60 game online. You know, I don't think we can take that as entirely, you know, FUT revenue, okay? Mm-hmm. Madden's revenue is more or less, you know, $125 million. Still very good.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's entirely MUT revenue because number 7 on this list, Fallout 4, at $108 million, which Fallout 4 has released no DLC yet.
They don't have like a season pass or anything?
They have a season pass, but I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe somebody bought an online special edition, but the majority of that has got to be the main game.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and certainly it's not, you know, they don't have the extras like FUT or MUT. But it just points
now,
to...
Now we have UFC. What is UFC? UT?
Oh, God.
UUT yeah. is what they've named that, so...
It's MUT.
Oot.
Oot.
MUT. No, the reason that I bring this up is whether or not you believe in the figures or not, it shows the importance of digital revenue to the two biggest sellers... Although it's interesting that NBA 2K is not anywhere on here. Grand Theft Auto 5 is number 3 at $322 million. That's a game that launched in 2013 and 2014.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's almost entirely, I would think, you know, the add-on revenue there. But it shows that with the price point, I don't think we're ever going to see packaged goods in video gaming going above $59.99. I don't think the marketplace will tolerate it. And so, you know, publishers understand that and they go, we have to sell stuff on top of that if we're going to grow our business because you've got to grow revenue. This shows, you know, where the future lies. It shows healthy growth, you know, and people can complain and they go, you put all your development into the Ultimate Team modes. You didn't do X, Y, and Z. Well, yeah. And that might be not what you want to play, but I mean, you know, the alternative is either, you know, they sell a $75 game, which you're not willing to buy, no one should, or they go out of business because the licensing fees are incredible. And I mean, like, you know, I'm pretty sure that the Star Wars license does not compare to the NFL license, really, even that, okay? And when was the last time you saw in sports a licensing deal that was renewed or changed hands go down in dollar value? It doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that's why MLB is content to sit out the Xbox One. You know, because they won't, you know, EA, I'm sure, said, sure, we'll give you, you know, a fraction of whatever 2K did. And the mistake deal that it cut. But seriously, the leagues view the value of their license as a constant, and it will only go up. And so, you know, the alternative is either the game gets made or the game doesn't get made. Mm-hmm. And so online revenue is if nothing else, something we can look to and say, at least it means the game can get made.
Yeah. You know, real quick, I think what caught my eye looking over those lists of digital revenue was the top games in mobile and the top games on PC. What weren't they making in the billions, right? Like 1.6 billion. it's just insane.
Well, yeah, but that also speaks to, I mean, I don't want to speak to the exact veracity of these numbers because it's market research.
Yeah.
and who knows? But I think the console numbers are indicative of some health of the product.
Yeah, and on mobile and PC, there are many more games that fail as opposed to on consoles where they tend to be steady. So, I mean, it's more of a gamble there. So, TJ, what you got for me?
Ryan, my big story of the week is, obviously, sticking with this money spending stuff, the Madden Team of the Year team came out, and you'll be happy to hear that there are 4 Seahawks on it.
You know, I saw that, and can you explain, what is Team of the Year? Can you explain it to me? Because everyone talks about it like it's just, everyone knows what it is. But I, as someone who doesn't actively play Ultimate Team, and certainly not into February, what is Team of the Year?
Yeah, these are just the guys that have had a really good season, and they felt it was necessary to give them a little extra card. So there's a full offense and defense out there.
So how do they decide on them, though? Because I looked, and you know, Russell Wilson's in there, and he had an amazing season. But, I mean, everyone, you know, Cam Newton's going to get the MVP. So why wouldn't Cam Newton be the quarterback?
Well, I'm sure Cam Newton will get another card.
I'm sure, because there's like a million cards.
Yeah, they just did some Madden superlatives. So people had like best beard, best hands, stuff like that. So yeah, I think these are just guys they maybe didn't get enough Team of the Week or Football Outsider cards during the season that they wanted to get another card too.
So how do you obtain those guys? Is it a pack?
Yeah, you can get them in packs. There's also a collection. If you get 10 collectibles, put that into a set, you get one of these cards. The cards are pretty good, but what's really nice about all these cards being out there is the rest of the market's kind of crashing around it. So now is a good time to go out and buy some good cards at lower than average prices.
All right, there you go. So I'm just going to rattle off 2 things real quick. You know, we recently had, Owen wrote about this as well. I wrote about it on Sporting News. Kirk Herbstreit, of course, former commentator on the NCAA football series, made some comments about how he thinks the game should come back and about how players don't want to get paid for it. They just want a video game to be out. And I'm not sure he completely had a grasp on what's going on legally with all this. But, you know, I wrote a reaction piece to that. Owen wrote about Herbstreit's comments. I think it's kind of interesting, especially coming off our discussion on the last podcast. So check those out. And then finally, just this week, a new game was announced called Dangerous Golf, which comes from the people behind the Burnout series. You know, it's a new studio that they formed, and this is their first game there. And basically, it's what the crash mode in Burnout was to kind of a golf setting now, where you are hitting the golf ball and attempting to create the most damage you can in various settings. And it's going to be a downloadable title, Xbox One, PS4, PC. It's going to be coming out in May. And I would not be surprised if later this year we look at that game and we think of it as this year's Rocket League. It has a lot of the same characteristics and the potential to reach a wider audience than just a sports game.
It looks like a great drunk game.
Yes. You know the other thing I thought of, Owen, when learning about this Dangerous Golf game was not just the crash mode and Burnout. I went back to the Bigs and the Home Run Derby pinball.
Yes.
And I love that mode. So I think there's a lot of potential with this game.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think that really has that could be a lot of fun.
And that's what we need. We need, you know, fun games. We have all these simulation games, and then along came Super Mega Baseball, which we loved. Along came Rocket League, which most of us love. So I'm excited for Dangerous Golf. It's a game we didn't know was coming, and it's you know, it just adds on to, hey, May. We don't have any other games coming out in May. Thank God it's not September. Dangerous Golf coming September, which is what would have happened last year, I'm sure. So, all right. You know, I'm considering taking the show back to a weekly schedule now that we've got a lot more stuff going on. May not be the full panel structure every week. Maybe we'll do some hyper-focused episodes in between the every other week panel shows like we tend to do, whether it be one panelist on with me or a guest in for an interview. So we'll see how that works out coming up. Thanks for hanging with us on this episode of the Press Row Podcast. Thanks to Polygonzo and Good, to That Sports Gamer, TJ Lowerman, and I'm Brian Weedy, Pasta Padre from Hit the Pass Sporting News and Pasta Padre. Until next time, everyone, take care.